are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
We assure everybody at home that this has not been at all a difficult process and everything has worked completely smoothly to set this podcast up.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I prefer to call what we've done Skype Disco with, all the various lights flashing on computers, etc. and so forth.
It's been more like Skype musical chair.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I guess I'm a little stunned that you thought I wanted to talk about it, because actually it's quite the opposite. I really kind of don't want to talk about it, but I want to explain. I want to explain why I don't want to talk about it.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst, friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Join with me on this podcast are Darius Austin and Chuck Anderson. Darius, thank you for joining. Welcome to the show. I don't even know what to say. Darius, how you doing?
I'd just like to reassure everybody at home that this has not been at all a difficult process and everything has worked completely smoothly to set this podcast up.
We've spent the last 30 minutes trying to get this all working, unfortunately having some issues with Skype today, but glad to have you on, Darius. Chuck, how are you, my friend?
I am doing wonderful. I prefer to call what we've done Skype Disco with, all the various lights flashing on computers, et cetera, and so forth.
It's been more like Skype musical chairs.
That's probably true.
Now, joining us today is Greg Jewett from Fan Rag Sports. Greg, thank you for joining us and being so, so fucking patient.
Not a problem. Plus, I learned about Toto, so this is all good.
Greg, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself and where you can reach on social media?
Let's see. I do three articles a week for FanRag, which is more famously known for employing John Heyman, but I've been there for 3 years. I also do daily recaps for Fantasy Assembly, and me and my buddy run a little DFS site called StraightShootersDFS.com. So I keep pretty busy.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I'm sorry. On Twitter, it's at GJEWETT9. I spell that out because my students even still spell my last name wrong, so I have to put that out there.
That's why I changed my last name, just to make it easier for all those Twitter people. Well, thank you for joining us, Greg. We've had so many technical issues just getting started. I'm gonna just hop right into things, and let's talk about the first topic, which is one that Chuck wanted to talk about. There's been a lot of talk all kind of season, preseason, about Arizona putting in a humidor at some point this season. Greg, what are your thoughts on a proposed humidor coming into Arizona? Is it a good idea, bad idea, and what would be the effects for fantasy?
Well, it's kind of funny because, their pitchers have been doing very well this year. I was really shocked when I went and looked. I mean, I knew they were doing well, but the D-backs have a 3.69 FIP so far this year with a 48% ground ball percentage. So, I mean, their pitchers have made some of the adjustments, and Colorado's been trying to add more and more ground ball pitchers and guys with good fastballs to kind of combat the ballpark elements. So I think the humidor will help the pitchers some. It's probably more for the road pitchers, I would imagine. I mean, Coors has kind of gone down with home runs, but they still give up the most runs in the ballpark effects on ESPN. So I don't know if it's going to make me panic if I own Jake Lamb or something of that nature. We'll just have to see how it plays out. It could drop home runs a little bit, but it's still going to be a good ballpark. I mean, you're looking right now in the ballpark effects, and Minnesota and a couple other parks are up there. So I don't see the humidor being a complete downfall for their hitters.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I guess I'm a little stunned that you thought I wanted to talk about it, because actually it's quite the opposite. I really kind of don't want to talk about it, but I want to explain. I want to explain why I don't want to talk about it. And Darius and I kind of went back and forth at 4 o'clock in the morning, our time, the other day. The reason that I don't want to talk about it is because I don't think you can do anything about it. Okay, Greg astutely brought up Jake Lamb. Okay, he's one of the guys that's kind of in the lurch. People are wondering because he's not really, you know, hasn't really shown consistent power, but he's got some right now. But the point being is that when it comes to Paul Goldschmidt, it doesn't matter what effect it has or not. You're not trading him for, you know, for nickels on the dollar because of the humidor. Then you have AJ Pollock, who's coming back from injury. Well, nobody, you can't trade him to begin with. Okay. Then everybody else on the team, Chris Owings, you know, Chris Herman, whoever else you want to come up with, all the other people that are on the team are people that you didn't really draft for power to begin with, and they don't really have enough value that you're going to trade them for anything anyway. Okay? And then supposedly it's going to help the pitchers, so you're not trading the pitchers either. And on top of it, to add to my acrimony about this, is that they've pushed back the date three times. And I just can't fathom that they really want to change things up when they're playing the best baseball that they've played in 10 years. So the whole thing is just a massive annoyance to me, actually.
Well, thank you for telling me how you really feel. Darius, what are your thoughts on this?
I agree with Chuck on a lot of those points, I think. I'm not sure there's a lot of point worrying about it until we actually see the Diamondbacks do it. And as Chuck mentioned, they've been talking about it on and off. I think this isn't the first year that they've talked about having it, and certainly they were talking about it in April, and now it's nearly the end of June, and they still haven't finished it, although it sounds like it's nearly ready. So we'll see whether they actually get on and implement it around the All-Star break like they're claiming in the latest article I read. I do think that the effect could be fairly significant, and that's entirely based off an article by Alan Nathan, which I think I mentioned before on the pod, but he's basically the leading expert on physics in baseball, and he thinks because Arizona's actually got a lower relative humidity than Colorado does, that the humidor will have more effect in Arizona than it has in Coors. And he estimated at least kind of a 25% reduction in home runs. Now, in terms of guys like Lamb and Paul Goldschmidt, I'm not going to worry about those guys. I think they've got enough power. I don't think we're going to be suddenly going, oh, these guys can't hit home runs anymore. I think maybe your Chris Owings types who aren't quite so high end on the power scale, maybe they would suffer more. But primarily, I think I would be looking at pitching matchups, as Greg mentioned, that certainly the visiting pitchers, and maybe just not worrying quite so much about Arizona as a hitter's park. But I think we obviously need to wait and see if they actually do it, and then what actually ends up happening. So I wouldn't go out and sell or buy anybody particularly high or low based on this supposed change that may or may not happen in the next few weeks.
I mean, that would be a fairly significant change, a 25% reduction in home runs. I mean, they currently have 61 home runs. That would drop them from 61 home runs at home, and that would drop them from 5th to about the area of 17th towards the
Yeah. So I think what it might be reasonable to stop thinking about it is kind of a definite hitter's park, and it maybe shift towards neutral. I still think most of their hitters will hit plenty of home runs, but I think we probably would have to not worry about it quite so much on that front.
Yeah,
I am curious. I'm curious about one thing Darius and I were talking about, and I wonder if he agrees with me. The one thing that comes to my reactionary mind is that if a home run ball travels less distance, or a potential home run ball, then a line drive travels less distance as well. And don't you want the line drives to fall in before outfielders get to them? And I know, you know, singles, etc., singles, doubles don't matter as much as home runs, but guys like Chris Owings, who you didn't draft for home runs to begin with, all of a sudden they have more line drives fall in because they fall in front of the outfielders? Or am I not thinking about this correctly?
Well, I think it's complicated, and certainly a lot of home runs are obviously fly balls instead of line drives. So my guess would be that they would be more likely to turn into outs rather than fall in for hits. But I think we don't really know until it happens. I mean, we saw in Coors, they may have made the park huge to try and adjust for the altitude, and all that did was mean that it left more ground for the balls to fall in for hits. So I think until we actually see it installed and see how it plays out, we can't be absolutely sure. And I know that Alan Nathan didn't really address the issue of whether it would have a positive increase on batting average. So my guess would be that it will influence players differently depending on what their current batted ball profile is like. But until we know the precise effect, and we're not going to have any data on that for obviously some time after it's installed, it's very hard to say who that will be a positive or a negative for.
Yeah, I just can't imagine that this actually happens this season. I mean, not with the way that the Diamondbacks are pitching, not with the way that the team is playing. I mean, they currently are literally 15th. So, I mean, literally like the median in the league in terms of home runs given up at home, the Diamondbacks are. I can't imagine they're going to screw with their success. Because, I mean, if they did, it would forever taint the humidor in Arizona if the team then falls apart. Because everybody will then blame it on forever the humidor and the adding effects, whether or not it is actually the fault of the humidor. So I got a feeling you're going to keep hearing this getting pushed back and that they are not going to do this. Because mid-season, adding something like this mid-season that changes a pitcher, that could potentially change the feel of the ball to a pitcher, could change all sorts of things for the team. When they're successful, I just can't imagine it happens. Let's move on. Let's talk about Justin Turner. Chuck, you did want to talk about Justin Turner, right?
I do want to talk about Justin Turner, yes.
Okay, tell me why.
Well, I wonder in this day and age if you can have a really, really good hitter like this, hitting for average, that's hitting for so little power. I wonder if it's gotten to the point where his value has to be completely fallen off. Like, he has to be like outside the top 30 third baseman, because you can't have a third baseman who has five home runs, and put together a solid lineup without trying to figure out how to get guys that are going to hit 45 home runs instead of 35 home runs. And, I own Justin Turner in a number of places, and I thought his 27 home runs last year coming off that knee, coming off the knee issues that he had early in the year, I thought he was going to be a good power guy. And I'm proposing the question that he's undraftable if he doesn't get to more than 12 home runs.
Greg, what are your thoughts on Justin Turner and this kind of thought process that Chuck has going on?
I understand what he's saying, but as a Miguel Cabrera owner right now who has 9 home runs on the season with a .260 average, I'm a little bit more concerned about him and his back. Justin Turner, I love using the weighted runs created plus metric on FanGraphs, which I know you're right for, Justin. And, he's still at 176 this year. He's walking 10% of the time, striking out 10.9. His hard contact is actually direct line with last year. He's just, his home runs per fly ball percentage has been cut in half so far. There's nothing saying that in the second half he can't get hot like any other of these Dodger hitters and just go on a home run binge. It's not really his game, but he's hitting 308, 379, 499 as a Dodger. There's still value in a player that can hit for that average with the on base, and he's going to score runs and drive in runs. So yes, the power would be great if it would come around, but I'm not willing to give up on him. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't mind adding a couple of shares of him, even though I like Chuck, have him in a few spots.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Justin Turner?
Yeah, I certainly get where Chuck's coming from. I think that the thing with Turner is he's so good a hitter now. He's so elite in batting average at the moment. He might hit .340 this season. The on base is great as well, as Greg mentioned. And I think that he's so extreme in those categories. He could be 80 or 90 points better than the league average in batting average. And I think as much as the lack of power is painful in this environment, or it feels like it is, his approach is so good, and he's so good in those categories, and obviously the Dodgers are looking pretty good right now as well, that I think you kind of have to still use him, even if you're not getting maybe the power that you want. And the other thing I would say is that he did this last year. He had almost no power through the end of May, and then he heated up in the second half, and I think he hit 22 or maybe 23 of those 27 homers sort of through from June, and he does have 5 home runs this month. So I wouldn't be surprised, as Greg says, if he does come out and hit a few more in the second half. I don't think he's going to be a 30-plus guy, but if he hits 320, 330 with kind of a 390, 400 OBP and gets to 20 home runs, and obviously the counting stats should be good in the lineup, then I think that's still extremely usable.
Yeah, I honestly, I think this is maybe just a tad bit fluky, and I think the home runs are coming. And there was nobody more down on Justin Turner coming into the year than I was. I was not a Justin Turner believer. I was not a Justin Turner fan. I was not a believer in the Dodgers' offense. And, you know, Cody Bellinger has single-handedly proved a lot of that wrong. But, I mean, I'm looking at, like, at his launch angle breakdowns from last year to this year, and he's actually got a slightly higher launch angle, it looks like, than this year than he does last year. So it's not that. He's not hitting less fly balls. I think this is just a matter of time, and the ball is going to start going out of the park. And so I'm not worried about Justin Turner and the power not showing yet. I think it will. I think it's one of those things where he's just going to have a big month or two at some point, because all the metrics in terms of exit velocity, in terms of the how hard he's hitting the ball, I show me that he at some point is going to the ball is going to start leaving the yard, and I think he's just kind of had in one of those moments right now where things aren't going out, and I think they will, especially as things warm up around the country. Let's move on, talk about Parker Bridwell, who is a former kind of prospect with some sheen, he was a former Oriole, is now in the Angels system, and is seemingly doing fairly well in his first kind of real run in the Angels organization. So, Greg, what are your thoughts on Parker Bridwell?
I don't have any shares of him. If I did, I guess I'd be cautiously optimistic. But his FIP and 95.7 strand percentage worry me a little bit. So he's been a little bit lucky, so correction is going to be coming. So I guess it's going to be how he handles it. The most encouraging things that I saw, I like using Brooks Baseball, was his change is getting a 33.3 whiff per swing, and his slider is doing well at 35.7 whiff per swing. He's doing well in his batting average against with those two pitches. It's just going to be a matter of if the hitters start tuning up his fastball a little bit here. So, again, I look at that 2.95 ERA, and then I look at the 6.19 FIP and the 5.32 xFIP, and it just makes me a little nervous for his next couple of starts. I don't know about you, gentlemen.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Parker Bridwell?
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't count on extended success, I don't think. I mean, he's dealt with a lot of injury issues the last couple of years. I don't think he's made it to 100 innings in either of the past two seasons. And I think he was somebody who was considered to be a likely bullpen guy, really. It was somebody who didn't really have a third pitch and maybe needed the relief to play his fastball up as well, which kind of is a 92, 93 mile per hour pitch when he's starting. But we get 95 plus out of the pen. So he was very impressive in his start against Boston over the weekend. But I think outside of the change, I know there was some concern over whether the slider was good enough, and the fastball looked pretty straight to me. I think big league hitters could start squaring that up in fairly short order, as Greg noted. So, if you've got maybe a friendly matchup or two and the league hasn't really seen him yet, then you could go ahead and chance your arm on that. But I think regression is going to come quite fast, and he may well end up back in a bullpen before long.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Bridwell?
Well, I did notice that his batting average on balls in play against is .274 for the year as an Angel, which really is good, but it's not crazy low. I also noted that, generally speaking, his K per nine has always been better than it's been so far at the big league level. So that might be one of the factors that could help decrease his FIP a little bit. You know, desperate times call for desperate measures. And I have this idea in my head, you know, he's had 3.1 major league innings before this season. So I've always had this, I always have this idea in my head that some guys can click it into an extra drive when they get to the major leagues. You know, you take some guys like Jacob DeGrom, et cetera, that were not as highly touted as, or weren't supposed to be as good as they've been since they've gotten here. And with him being only 25 years old, You know, he's a right-handed guy, 6'4", 185, so tall and skinny. So the downward plane should be there with the 6'4". So I'm just to say I'm guardedly optimistic is exactly what it is. And I guess I just brought up his name because we have a tendency to talk about a lot of mainstream guys, and there was probably a good amount of people out there listening to our podcast today who said, who in the hell is Parker Bridwell? Because it's not a name that was really on the tip of the public's tongue, a month ago, to say the least.
The only reason I know Parker Bridwell is because in the deepest league I've ever played in, it's a 30-team league, 100-man rosters. I owned Parker Bridwell until this offseason, and I traded him for a future late-round pick in an upcoming draft. He's got a bad fastball, and that, to me, is not something that will be able to help him sustain what he's done so far. Greg kind of alluded to his FIP and ex-FIP being – 2 and 3 runs higher than his ERA right now. His strand rate is 95.7%. That's not going to sustain. I don't think he's a guy that necessarily even has a plus pitch, though the slider looked decent. I would say that if he has one plus pitch, it's the slider. But I'm not a big fan of prospects that are 25, 26 years old making their first debut with bad fastballs. So for me, I would be looking to sell for anything I could get at this point. Let's go ahead and talk about Daniel Murphy. And he has been a hot button kind of guy on this podcast, especially on any show that Chuck is on, because Chuck is a big fan. But I'll start with you, Greg. What are your thoughts on Daniel Murphy so far this year?
I don't see anything that's crazy different. It's his numbers. I mean, he's exactly halfway games wise to last season, and almost everything's in direct line. I mean, he made those adjustments with the Mets, and he's carried them over to the Nationals, and they've stuck. His ISO and hard contact are down a little bit this year, but you're really nitpicking there, and he's actually increased his walk percentage, so he's even being more selective. So, I don't see how you go wrong with him and the 340 average and the 393 on base. I mean, he's just rock solid. But to give Chuck something to think about, I mentioned the WRC plus earlier. Over the last 365 statistical days, so the last statistical year, only Trout, Freeman, and Votto have a higher WRC plus than Justin Turner. And then Turner is only two notches ahead. He's got a 153, and Daniel Murphy has a 151 over that same time span. So they're very similar, and Murphy has 26 home runs over the last 365 days. Turner has 21. So I still think Turner's going to see that power come around. But I'm a fan of Murphy as well. I think they're both rock solid.
All right, Chuck, go ahead and rant on Daniel Murphy.
Boy, poor Greg is going through one Chuck rant after another. The point being with Daniel Murphy is that we got into it in the chat room a couple times, and some people mentioned that Daniel Murphy is a fifth or a sixth round pick next year in drafts. And I just, for the life of me, cannot see that. I think when you look at as solid as he's been, and he's not a negative in any category except stolen bases, really, as negative, as positive as he's been over the last couple of years, I think he's the epitome of what Joe Mauer was at the height of his career, with more power and second base eligibility. And Joe Mauer then, in a time when batting average was more attainable, in those days, Joe Mauer was like a top 7 or 8 pick. And for the life of me, I cannot figure out why people would let a guy like Daniel Murphy, as solid as he's been, and he's just, there's no signs of decline at all yet in his game. I don't understand why people would let him get out of the top 30 picks, but I consistently get pushed back against that. And that's the only thing about Daniel Murphy. I think Daniel Murphy ends up first base eligible at some time next year. If they're in a jam, he's even played some third over time. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why there's any negativity towards a guy who finished second in the MVP race last year and is in the middle of such a great lineup. So that's been my only my outcry about Daniel Murphy.
All right. Well, I'm going to tackle some things. I don't know that, I mean, he may gain second base eligibility in season next year, but he hasn't played a game at first base eligibility. He hasn't played a game at first this year. I don't think there's anybody, at least, I mean, maybe I'm speaking for people when I shouldn't, but after what Greg said, I don't, and I think I could probably speak for Darius, that says he's not a top 30 pick. So, I mean, I understand, like, maybe there are other people out there saying he's a fifth, sixth round pick. I think he's a surefire second, third round pick next year. And I mean, and I paid the price on him this year, so I'm right there with you. I think he, I was wrong on Murphy, coming into this, or well, probably coming into last season, because I did not buy it coming into last season, but I bought him a number of shares, just not in leagues with you, because you were insanely high on him. But I don't think there's any reason to doubt what he's done over the course of the last year and a half. Since coming over from the Mets, and he plays in one of the best lineups in baseball. It's you know, he's going to get the counting stats around him to go with, you know, the 25 home runs he's going to get, and you know, the 340 average he's going to hit. So I mean, yeah, do I think he's going to sustain 340 average the whole year? No, I think it's going to probably come down. But I think, yeah, I would agree with you that he is a top, you know, 30 to 40 talent. Darius, what are your thoughts on Daniel Murphy?
Well, I think you and Greg said most of what I would say, and just to touch on something that Greg brought up, which is the Justin Turner comp. There really isn't an awful lot of difference here. I mean, I know Turner hasn't had much power right now, but I think conceivably we could get to the end of the season and Murphy will have 25 homers and Turner will have 20, and the runs in RBI will be similar and the batting averages will be similar, and Turner walks more. So, yeah, that's all I would say, really. I think Murphy is a great player, and I just don't think that Turner is actually all that different from him. So I find it interesting that Chuck doesn't seem to want to own Turner. But Daniel Murphy is like a second round pick.
I think Chuck doesn't like Turner because he drafted him for the power explosion he thought he was going to get, and he hasn't gotten it yet. He's being impatient.
That is very true. But I am very happy that you guys have vocalized what I consider to be a decent amount of respect for Daniel Murphy, and maybe the people in the chat room were just trying to get under my skin, because Daniel Murphy will never last till the fifth round in any league that I'm in.
I can guarantee you that. I can't speak for everyone at Friends of Fantasy Benefits, but I, as far as I think we're concerned, I have jumped on the bandwagon. I did it late. I did it later than I should have, but I have jumped on the bandwagon completely.
Well, you guys are bringing up an interesting point that if, you know, through your guys' astute knowledge, if you're noticing that Turner and Murphy are nearly identical players, if you can get Turner late in the fourth or early in the fifth and you think you're getting the same player as Murphy, maybe that's the lesson that we've learned here.
Yeah, I don't know if I would do that. I'm still not as high on Turner, I think, as maybe others are. I think there is some regression coming in the average, and I think third base is much deeper, and there are guys with different profiles I would prefer. I'm probably not there on Turner, but I think he is potentially a buy low for someone who needs the power.
The only thing I'll add is that, you know, while I certainly realize that Daniel Murphy hasn't played first base this year, unbelievably enough, a Ryan Zimmerman injury is within the realm of possibility, and I think that would move him to first base. That's all.
All right, let's kind of shift gears and talk about James Paxton. Now, he was the kind of the hottest guy in pitching this year, then went on the DL, has not been the same since. And I'm in a number of fantasy baseball related Facebook groups, and I've seen a number of people say things like, is it time to drop James Paxton, or I just dropped James Paxton finally. And I don't necessarily get that. So, Greg, would you drop James Paxton?
I only have one share of him, but I don't think you can drop him right now. I mean, you can't just put somebody out there that could turn things around. I did enjoy reading up Paul Spohr's article on him, and he really detailed how well Paxton started the year, giving up a 186 average against. He was striking out 30% of the batters with a 7% walk rate. Then after the DL stint, I'm taking June. He does have a 188 whip in June, so Devo fans can unite there. 317 average against, and he's given up a home run in five straight games, so he hasn't been the same pitcher. So I understand where people are jumping off, but I think it's probably too soon. I'm going to give him another start or two before I entertain any decision like dropping him in that kind of regard. I think it's too soon. The velocity's there. He mentioned that there were some things he noticed mechanically he was doing wrong, so I'm going to give Big Maple another start or two to figure it out.
Darius, what are your thoughts on James Paxton?
Yeah, I think he'll be fine as long as the health sticks, and that's always been the concern for me. I think that the last start was much more promising. I know he still walked three, but I think it looked like the command was coming back. And while I don't like to see him walking, I think he's walked three and four of his last five starts, so that's not as good, but I think he can strike out enough guys to even make up for that kind of control. And if he'd continued his pace from the early few weeks of the season, obviously it would have been one of the greatest pitching seasons of all time. So I think we can see him settle back in as certainly a very good number two, at least as long as he can stay healthy. And we'll see about that, because that's always been the issue for him. But I'm not going to be dropping him in any leagues unless something drastic happens.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I think people are extremely reactionary in fantasy sports. And this is just, to me, another example of it. I mean, he's still a guy that, even in this bad stretch of in June, coming back from the injury, he's still got a sub-3.5 ERA. Like, I mean, he's been fantastic this year, and he's still got over 10 strikeouts per nine. I mean, you know, in a year where we've been dealing with massive amounts of pitcher injuries, massive amounts of pitcher underperformance, James Paxton is probably saved more teams than just about any other pitcher out there. And I can't imagine why people would be dropping him at this point. If he gets dropped in your league, you scoop him up, because the talent is real. It's always, you know, it's been about health for him. He made some real sustainable changes, added velocity last year, pitches from the left-hand side. You know, I understand that there's, you know, maybe some mechanical hiccups right now, but he's coming back off an injury. As long as he's healthy, I think he's going to be fine. I'm not bailing from him at all. All right, let's go ahead and move on. Or Chuck, did you talk about Paxton?
I did not talk about Paxton.
Oh, sorry. I was so angry about the Daniel Murphy stuff that
I wouldn't blame you at this point if you were sick of talking to me, but I just want to mention that it amazes me the people that everyone has this incredible amount of patience for. You know, like over the last couple of years, you know, Lance McCullers could do no wrong no matter how many times he got hurt. Aaron Nola stunk for the second half of last season. Then all of a sudden this offseason, you know, everybody had to have him again. You know, Taiwan Walker is another guy. Everybody loves him every single year. Okay. And a guy like Paxton just seems like has been given the shortest leash I can ever remember, especially for a guy that was that dominant for that stretch of time. It doesn't make any sense to me. Like Jeff Samardzija is on like his ninth live. People still think he's going to be good for the rest of the season all of a sudden because of his peripherals. Well, we've been saying that his whole career. So it amazes me that people would have this little patience with a guy with this kind of upside when everybody has a pitcher on their roster right now who's struggling and scuffling through a rough stretch. If you don't, you're winning your league, and I congratulate you. But those people are few and far between. So, you know, stick it out with Paxton. I mean, that kind of upside is not easily found.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. All right, let's talk about Eric Thames. And, I mean, he started off the year amazing, was pretty much like, I don't know, Ted Williams and Barry Bonds mixed together to start the season. I mean, hit 11 home runs in the month of April with a 3.45 average, but since has struggled a little bit. The homers have still been there, still 9 home runs, total in the months of May and June, but is been like almost a Mendoza line hitter since then. Chuck, you were his biggest fan. Who is the real Eric Thames?
I'm hoping that it's at least somewhere between the two extremes that I've seen, because in recent weeks, he's had some terrible at-bats, and that's one of the main things that I went to the plate with him for, is I said early in the season, he didn't have any weak at-bats. He wasn't just flailing. He didn't look like he was lost. Then all of a sudden, he got into a zone where his contact just wasn't as solid, like his timing seemed like it was off. Well, now his timing seems off, and all of a sudden the plate discipline doesn't appear to be what it used to be. He has some really weak, you know, 3 and 4 pitch at bats where it's just like, all right, grab some pine. So for the Brewers and within the team concept, it's a really good time to get Ryan Braun back, because Ryan Braun, you know, offers a stabilizing force in that middle of the lineup, where this is by far the worst stretch that I've seen Thames at the plate. And if he's going to be this sporadic, I do think that I have to change my long-term prognosis for him a great deal into far, far, far down into the middle tier of first baseman with as good as the upper tier is.
Greg, what are your thoughts on Eric Thames?
Yeah, I think all players go through this, and we almost have to treat him like a rookie that got off to a hot start. So now the league's adjusted to him. So how is he going to adjust back again? And he's been through so much through his time in Korea and the other things that I'm rooting for him. But right now he's almost setting up like a first base Justin Upton, if that makes sense, just due to I think there's going to be streakiness to his game, and I think that's just going to be there. And it's possible that that this is kind of who he is. I'm hoping, like Chuck, that it's somewhere in the middle, but we're going to have to see how the rest of the year goes. So I'm really interested to see how he adjusts back to what the league's got the book on him right now.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Eric Thames?
Yeah, it's obviously hoping at least something in the middle as well. It's he just doesn't seem to quite have the bat speed to me. Some of those home runs he hit early on were just ludicrous, the way he turned on the pitches. And I think there was a quote from him at one point that he sort of almost sounded like he surprised himself how quickly he got around on some of them. And he doesn't seem to be doing that anymore. He does seem to be missing those, and the bat's coming through too slowly. I know Jeff Sullivan talked about whether he thought maybe a couple of niggling injuries bothered him. He's been ill. I think we've seen him come out of a couple of games early, and it hasn't been anything long term. But obviously, players get hurt, and maybe he is starting to carry things where he was maybe feeling better in April. Who really knows? But the one thing that I like is that he is still walking. It isn't as good as it was, and as Chuck said, the discipline hasn't been as good. But the walk rate is still in the double digits, and the other trends are concerning. So, yeah, hopefully he makes some adjustments and he doesn't let the slump get to him and make that plate discipline deteriorate even more, because I think that's what I was personally hanging my hat on, that he seemed to be so good at not chasing, and that seems to have gone away a little bit. So hopefully he can find himself again, and maybe we'll get something in between, kind of a 250, 260 hitter who can hit 35 to 40 home runs would be just fine for me. But as you say, over the last couple of months, he really hasn't been that at all.
Yeah, I think it was in that same Jeff Sullivan piece that you referenced. It talked a little bit about the fact that, it might have been Paul Spohr talking about it on Sleeper in the Buzz, that when Thames first came into the league or came back into the league this time around, people really challenged him with people threw him a lot of breaking stuff and a lot of off speed stuff. And what people, I guess, don't realize is that you see a ton of that in Korea, and he smashed a lot of that. And now he's having maybe some issues catching up to the fastball. So I think part of this is due to injury. I mean, he's been dealing with some hamstrings injuries. If you can't get your lower half properly into your swing, that can lead to problems. Do I think he was as good as he showed in the first month? No, I think he just got on a hot streak. People hadn't seen him before, or at least in the last better part of a decade. And he took advantage of it, took advantage of a good park, took advantage of the fact people didn't have a book on him. Now people have a book on him. He's not 100% healthy, and I think he is struggling, and I think he will need to make adjustments. And he's still walking over 10% of the time, so I'm not necessarily worried about his batting eye. He's just not making the proper contact, and I think it'll turn around. Do I think he is a top 10 first baseman coming into next year? Yes, I do. I mean, he's still going to end up with probably 35-plus home runs. And, you know, it may not be at the average you wanted it, but, I mean, how different is he than a guy like, Chris Davis with a C? You know, his average isn't going to be great, but his OBP is going to supplement. He's going to have a ton of power. He's in a great ballpark. He's going to have a decent lineup around him. I think he's still a top 10 first baseman next year, even if he continues to struggle quite a bit. I'm okay admitting the fact that I was wrong on Eric Thames coming into the year. Let's talk about Cole Hamels, because Cole Hamels has been absolutely atrocious this year. He just came back from injury, an oblique injury, and got completely bombed in his first start back. Greg, what are your thoughts on Cole Hamels?
Right now, I'm thankful I have zero shares of him. The velocity drop is worrisome, and having the same amount of strikeouts as walks to start the year. And I know he just came off of the DL, but the collapse in the swinging strike percentage, and the bigger worry is that people aren't chasing any pitches outside the strike zone on him. He's not inducing anyone to really swing and miss and stuff. So when you're not healthy and your velocity's down and people are teeing off, it makes me nervous. His last start against those Indians on Brooks Baseball, they had his fastball averaging 91.86. I don't know if he can live there right now.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Hamels?
Yeah, Greg hit a lot of my concerns. I think the thing for me with that fastball, and this was really on display in that first start off the DL, it's not getting past anybody. Every single hitter seems to be able to get good contact on it. If you just watch that start and see how many Indians hitters just hit good line drives off it, it looks extremely hittable. The whiff percentage on that is less than 3% this year. Now, it's not been his major swing and miss pitch over the course of his career, but if you can't get your fastball by anybody, you're going to have a lot of difficult at-bats. I think the curve also looks like it's off. He's leaving it up. He's leaving it over the middle of the plate too often. And, I didn't like the trends in the walk rate last year, but he doesn't even look like he should be in the majors. He's got the same number of strikeouts and walks, and you just can't live there. So I don't know if this is going to improve, if maybe that was just the first start off the DL thing, but he really looked uncomfortable out there, off balance. Yeah, I'm extremely discouraged. And like Greg, I'm very glad that I don't have any shares of him.
Chuck, I believe you have some shares of Mr. Cole Hamels.
That is factually incorrect.
I have been
down on Cole Hamels since the second that he got traded to Texas. I didn't think that a pitcher with his career history and how hard they rode him and the deep playoff runs that he had with Philadelphia, I did not think it was a good idea for him to go to Texas, to go to both the AL West and that ballpark. At the end of his career, and fortunately for me, I have not touched him in the last couple of years. I think that he can have small stretches of usefulness, but his name value has held in drafts, and he's just gone way too high for a guy whose stuff is diminished. We focus so hard on peripherals on so many different pitchers, and yet because he was Cole Hamels, we seem to give him a pass on exactly how bad his peripherals have been going down in recent years. So Cole Hamels is, unfortunately, he's been a great professional, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm D-U-N done on Cole Hamels.
Yeah, I've been done for quite a while on Hamels. I've saw the decline, and I don't have any shares either. Aside from the fastball being bad, and the curveball really is one of the things that I noticed, how poor it is played this year. He is leaving it up too much. There seems to be some pitch mix issues. Because in spite of the fact that the fastball has not been nearly as good as it's been in the past, it's slower, it's not getting as good of movement, he's throwing it more this year, which doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I mean, he's continuing to throw it over 50% of the time. I think that needs to change. I mean, he's not going to be this bad the rest of the way, but I don't really have a ton of faith that he's going to be anywhere close to the numbers that we've seen from him the last few years. There are times where we talk about buying low and selling high, and I think Cole Hamels is one of those examples of a guy that I'm totally fine with selling low if for some reason I have him on my roster. All right, let's move on and talk about Matt Adams, because Darius wanted to talk about Matt Adams. He doesn't feel like he's been able to give enough love to Matt Adams. So Darius, tell me why you wanted to speak about Mr. Matt Adams.
I'll be honest, I just wanted to be fair to Matt Adams because he's kind of been in the news lately with the Braves talking about moving Freddie Freeman over to third base so they can keep playing Matt Adams. And I sort of, you know, dismissed it because we know what Matt Adams is. And then I thought, well, no, I should be fair. I should take a proper look at Adams and see if anything has changed. Unfortunately for Matt, it hasn't. He still can't hit lefties. He's always kind of had a decent amount of power. He's always been above average against righties. And he has moved to what we think might be one of the best parks for left-handed pull hitters. We've seen a lot of homers go out to right field in the Braves' new park. And so I think that's in his favour. But I think he is a platoon guy who's on a particularly hot streak. And I think as long as the Braves keep starting him every day and he gets exposed to more left-handed pitching, then his line is going to start to look a lot worse fairly soon. And possibly they won't be playing Freddie Freeman at third base for long, if at all.
All right, Greg, what are your thoughts on Matt Adams?
It's funny because it's a lot of this looks statistically like it did back when he made in 2013 when he kind of tantalized people. I don't know what to make of Big City right now. I mean, he's had such a strong start with the nice ISO, the best slugging percentage of his career. I can't make sense of it. The one nice thing is to see the hard contact is back in line with what he did in 2013. When he had 17 home runs, I believe, in 105 games, and he's already up to 13 this year. I think I like using this term every once in a while. It's kind of like a rodeo. I think you ride him while he's hot, and when the bull kicks you off, you just dust yourself off and find the next one.
Chuck, are you buying in on Matt Adams, or are you still looking to sell?
Well, oddly enough, I'm the one who's going to buy in a little bit more than the rest of the panel here, I think. I am noting two things. Number one, I think the weight loss is significant and shows significant personal attention to becoming a better player. And I'm also noting that the Cardinals have been very odd this year. You know, they went out of their way. They tried to play him some in the outfield to try and make sure that it was in the lineup, but it never seemed like they really gave him full-time normal at bats, and now all of a sudden he's in the best situation that he could possibly be for a player of his profile. I know it's easy to fly under the radar when you've got Yonder Alonso coming out of nowhere, Ryan Zimmerman coming back from the dead, you know, you got good runs from guys like Matt Davidson, so it seems like all the first basemen are suddenly hitting a ton and what have you. I don't think the Braves have enough offensive depth that they can do anything but give him a long run here and see exactly what they have. And it really makes the most sense for them to do that. And so, you know, when I combine all the factors together, I think he's really interesting guy to buy in case somebody just is waiting for him to fall off and give him a chance, because he's going to stick towards the middle of that lineup. And it's amazing watching balls fly out of the park to right field at SunTrust. Recently the Brewers were there and it was just crazy. So I'm far more in on Big City than the rest of the panel.
I don't think I'm down on Adams. I just think that what I just meant was he's hot as hell right now, so I'm willing to ride him out. I want to see what they do with Freeman when he does come back. I really don't know if they're going to leave him at third base, but I'm okay with Big City, so I don't know if I misspoke or gave you the wrong impression, Chuck, but I do like him. I added him in a couple of spots for the home runs with that ballpark, and obviously it's worked out well, so it's just going to see. I want that hard contact to stick, and, you know, but we all kind of keep waiting to see when that league adjustment is going to come, just like with them, so we'll see what happens when they do that with Matt.
I guess I just played off like the rodeo analogy or what have
you.
Yeah,
yeah.
The only thing I'm saying is that I would put him in and I would expect to be able to play him for the rest of the year. And I think he, with the depth at first base, I think he's going to be an interesting mid-round draft possibility next year. And that certainly doesn't necessarily have to be the case, because the grounds for the other opinion is definitely there, because, you know, he surged for a while in St. Louis and then, you know, he fell off into obscurity. So we have seen peaks and valleys before. But if he stays in shape, and I think he's potentially a better long-term value than I think he's given credit for.
I mean, here's what I'm going to say. Because I was in on Matt Adams when they acquired him. I bought and I promoted him, and I've been rewarded fairly well for it. And part of it is the field he's playing in right now. Part of it is the fact that was the opportunity. And I did buy in on some of the changes that he made in terms of getting healthier, getting in shape, being willing to move to other positions just to get playing time. It showed a level of desire and things that we don't necessarily tend to be able to quantify in terms of fantasy sports. He's playing out of his mind right now, and I'm going to say that. I think that it can continue for a little while he's while he's in the lineup. The problem is they're not moving Freddie Freeman to third base. To me, this is a complete bluff. You're going to move your star player, the face of your franchise, to a position he virtually has never played. I don't even know if he's ever played third base at the major league level. You're not moving him coming off of an injury to third base. That's ridiculous. This is a bluff. They're trading Matt Adams, at the deadline to a team that is contending. And you just got to hope that he ends up in another place with a short porch in right field. And there's one place and one team that has a need at first base with a short porch in right field, and that's the New York Yankees. And if he ends up on the Yankees, he's going to be fine. If he ends up at other places, he's going to hit some regression. And so it depends on where you think he ends up, because he's not going to finish the year in Atlanta once Freddie Freeman comes back. So I'm willing to kind of ride out the hot streak, because you pretty much got him for nothing. There's virtually, I mean, even NL only, you picked him up off the waiver wire more than likely. So I'm more than happy riding it out and hoping that he ends up in New York. All right, let's talk about the Angels bullpen, because it's an interesting bullpen to talk about right now. Over the course of the last 30 days, there has been a total of four players who have gotten saves in that bullpen. And really, the entire bullpen, for the most part, has been absolutely lights out. And so I'm wondering, who is the guy to own? And none of those guys who got saves are Cam Bedrosian, who's back from the DL finally. So, Greg, who's the guy to own long-term in the Angels bullpen?
I think for the rest of the season, as long as Bud Norris comes back from the knee, I think he's still going to be the guy. I think Socha wants Bedrosian to be the newly anointed extinguisher that the Indians made famous last year with Andrew Miller, and putting, I was watching the game the other night when they had runners on second and third, and they brought in Bedrosian. He got two strikeouts in a row and ended the inning. So I think Socha wants Bedrosian available at whatever point he wants to put him in, or he thinks the game's in the balance. He's comfortable with Middleton in the eighth, and he's got Hernandez, and, you know, he let Yusmeiro Pettis finish the game the other day because he was pitching all right in Fenway. And I think he doesn't want to put Bedrosian in the ninth inning, because then people will say, well, is there a closer controversy now? What are you going to do when Bud Norris comes back? If Bud Norris comes back and replaces David Hernandez, the beat writers don't care. If Bedrosian goes in the ninth and Norris comes back, then they're going to be asking all kinds of questions. So to me, it signals that when Norris is back and that knee's okay, that he's probably going to be the closer the rest of the way. I can't trust Houston Street, even though he's looked okay in his first two outings back from the DL. I just don't know. I think the Angels will just take whatever they can get out of him. I could be totally wrong here, but that's how I see it.
Darius, do you agree?
I don't recall a bullpen that's had so many choices as this at one time. It's kind of crazy how most everybody they've got in relief has kind of at one point over the last couple of weeks looked like they might be getting saves. And as you said, many of them have. I still think, and I think I've brought this up before, that Socia wants to give it back to Street. And I know that Street has talked before about how he'd rather just retire than not be the closer. And I don't know what clubhouse implications that has or whether, you know, he's completely serious about that. But I just have this feeling that he's the guy with, you know, the closer tag. He's got the most saves of the group. David Hernandez has kind of done it a little bit in the past. And obviously Norris has been doing it this year. And I think Hernandez is the one who's looked like he's lined up to get them most recently. But I have a sneaking suspicion that even though Street might be the one you want least based on his actual statistics in terms of fantasy, I feel like they want to give it back to him. And that's just based solely on my gut. I don't think they've actually said anything to that effect. But I have a feeling that, you know, Mike Socia is not exactly the most newfangled guy. He's probably got that temptation to put the guy who's done it before back in the role. And even though Street has been pretty terrible over the last couple of seasons, I would not be surprised if we see him closing games for Angels in a week or two.
Chuck, what are your thoughts about the Angels bullpen?
Well, I think Darius was getting more at what my angle was going to be at the end, and that's going to be the Mike Socia angle, not with me being as critical on Mike Socia as I usually am, but just from the track record says that he's going to lean towards a veteran. And so to me, that makes it either Bud Norris or Houston Street. I also find it fascinating because when the new school bashes into the old school, now all of a sudden, you know, in the back of Mike Socia's head, he's like, well, you know, I can sort of, I can reach both goals at the same time, meaning you can keep Cam Bedrosian's arbitration number down by him not being a closer, and you can use Cam Bedrosian when he's right. David Hernandez, who, you know, came back from the dead. I remember his great season in Arizona, which seems like it was 10 years ago, but I know it was like four. But David Hernandez, you can use those guys against the best parts of the lineup in the most critical spots and still, you know, appease the veterans within the clubhouse and have them close. And I think that's, you know, I think it's definitely Street or Norris whenever possible. And, you know, David Hernandez is kind of a veteran in and of his own right, but he doesn't have a lengthy, you know, lengthy history or a more recent history of closing. So my money is on Norris, who all indications, and I looked up two or three different articles, all indications are that they strongly suspect this is a 10-day DL stint and he'll be back and ready to go.
Yeah, I agree with you guys that I believe Norris is the guy that is going to reclaim the job when he's back from injury. He's been fantastic this year. I don't see any reason why they would go away from him. I mean, I love Bedrosian, but I think they're using him fairly well, and which is a little surprising because I'm not a Socia guy either. The one thing I want to mention is just the overall excellence of this bullpen, and there are a number of guys in this bullpen, including Yusmeiro Petit, Blake Parker, Hernandez, Middleton, that can be used in ways to supplement your ratio categories. If you're in a point where you're kind of behind in the ratios and you need to try to catch up, you know, this is the time of year where it's time to start making those moves. If you're behind in the ratio categories, you know, it's time to maybe stop streaming pitchers and start adding guys like this, especially a guy like Yusmeiro Petit, who's going to pitch multiple innings at a time, and other guys of his ilk that are having fantastic years. You know, he's pitching in 2-3 inning increments. He's still getting, he's striking out like 10 guys per nine. He's not walking, too many, and he's keeping a pretty good ERA and WHIP at the time. At the same time, so if you're in a position right now where you've been streaming and so you're doing well in wins and strikeouts or quality starts and strikeouts, and you really need to add or pick up some points in the ratio categories, now's the time to start thinking about guys to pick up that are going to supplement, and this bullpen is filled with them.
Justin, I just want to mention that I don't think I ever remember a team that's more out of line of what we thought they were going to be pitching-wise than what the Angels have been this year. I mean, if going into the season, if someone had told you that they were going to lose Tyler Skaggs, they weren't going to have Garrett Richards, and they were going to get nothing out of Jared Weaver, you would have thought that their pitching in general would be such a mess that they wouldn't be able to stay in games. Whereas if they had the decent offense that they had a few years ago, they would be in really good shape right now because they've gotten, they've gotten stuff from, J.C. Ramirez. They've gotten stuff from Jesse Chavez. I mean, and I'm not saying these guys are great, but they've been better than what we thought they were going to be. And when you have a weak rotation, exactly what you need is five or six relievers that you can go to, and somehow, voila, they have it. So if this was a vintage Albert Pujols year, if he was having a renaissance and they were getting anything offensively, they would be so much better than we thought they were going to be, and maybe they are anyway.
And the fact they've been able to stay above 500 without Mike Trout and without all those pitchers is pretty amazing. And they're a team to watch because Tyler Skaggs is on a minor league rehab assignment. Mike Trout is working his way back. Matt Shoemaker's working his way back. They're a team that could actually make some noise in the wild card race if they could continue to do what they've been doing and then add those pieces back. All right, let's quickly talk about Billy Hamilton before we wrap up. And the reason I want to bring him up is, again, just like James Paxton, I've been seeing posts from people wondering if they should drop Billy Hamilton. So, Greg, is there any chance you're dropping him?
Well, I don't own him either, but I mean, I don't know how you can say you're going to be dropping him. He's exactly who you thought he was. He's a low-hitting average steals guy. I mean, he's got one dimension. He's good at one thing, stolen bases. So unless you're just giving up on stolen bases and punting him, I don't see how you're dropping him. I mean, you look over his stuff from the last 365 days and everything else, this is who he is. I know people were kind of drawn in a little bit by his second half last year when he had the high average, but he was just on a hot streak. He's not a good enough major league hitter to maintain an average that's 265 or higher, and his on-base percentage is never going to be where people want it to be for him to probably steal the 95 bases like he did in the minors. I mean, he is who he is. So if you drafted him, I think you just have to take him for what he is, a one-trick pony that gives you steals.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Billy Hamilton?
Yeah, I think Greg's spot on. If you drafted Hamilton and you thought he was going to be different from this, then you were crazy. I don't know where you would have been getting that from. He can't hit. He's never been a good hitter. He's probably one of, if not the weakest regular hitter in the majors, I think. And he doesn't seem to be getting any better. He doesn't seem to have learned anything. His plate discipline is not great. One thing I noticed, which is particularly weird for a switch hitter, is that he has no walks and 20 strikeouts in his 76 plate appearances against lefties this year. So if you thought he was a bad hitter anyway, then watch Billy Hamilton against lefties. He does not know what to do with them. He's got speed, and if you draft him for speed, then you need to keep him on your roster. But if you expected Billy Hamilton to hit 280 with a 330 on base and steal 90 bases, then you were deluding yourself, I think.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Hamilton?
My first thought on Billy Hamilton is that I want to see him race against the Flash, the guy from Atlanta. I want to see him start even and see exactly how close this Flash guy can stay or if the Flash guy could win. But on a more serious baseball note, I think the people that have been drafting Billy Hamilton, in the second and the third round in recent years. No, I guess second's a little early, but you see third and into the fourth round to make sure they get those speed. I can't imagine that they can pass up Trey Turner under any circumstances, because Trey Turner is so much of a better form of Billy Hamilton than we've seen before. I mean, four more steals last night for Turner, et cetera. I mean, what it really does is it shows all the flaws in Billy Hamilton and shows us that you can have a player that has nearly the same skill set as Billy Hamilton, but he's actually a good baseball player. And he plays a position, you know, shortstop, which, you know, is not very easy to fill right now. So I agree with everything you guys said. Billy Hamilton is exactly what we thought he was. And a hot month and a half last year, a lot of it against September pitching, does not change that in any way, shape, or form. I think you're going to see a serious fall off in draft position next year for Billy Hamilton. And while I wouldn't drop him, because I don't know how you can't drop him in a roto league. You can't drop a guy like that. I mean, if you drafted him, you acquired him, you got to keep him. But, you know, in a points league or something like that, I could definitely see dropping him.
Yeah, I mean, you can't drop him. And I mean, I've been a big Billy Hamilton fan. I didn't necessarily think he was going to hit 280 coming into the year. But, I mean, I thought there was a reasonable chance he could duplicate his numbers from last year, which makes him extremely valuable. And I still think he can. I mean, he's only hitting 13 points less than he was last year. There's no reason to believe that, you know, with a little bit of change in BABIP luck or that he can't hit 250 this year. And then steal you 60 bases. And that has an extreme amount of value in this day and age. How did I know, though, that Chuck was going to turn this into a Trey Turner conversation? I mean, I just set myself up for that one. But, Bill, I mean, before last night in Trey Turner's four stolen bases, Billy Hamilton was leading the majors in stolen bases. You're not dropping a guy like that. You're insane if you did. And you should have built in any sort of batting average risk and RBI risk and home run risk. When you bought Billy Hamilton, you didn't buy Billy Hamilton expecting to get contributions in other categories. He is a one-trick pony. He's going to offer you speed and run scored typically, and that's it. But you should have baked that into your projections, and I assume that most people did. So the idea that you're dropping him and you're gonna drop the guy who's probably going to lead the majors or be second in the majors in stolen bases is absolutely insane to me. So. All right, that is going to wrap us up. Greg, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was nice to talk to all three of you.
Definitely. Why don't you, again, tell people where you can reach on social media and then plug all your work.
I only got time to plug all my work, but anyways, and socials on Twitter, it's at GJEWETT9. It's after my boy Greg Nettles growing up. 9 was always my favorite number. I do 3 articles a week, a closer column, waiver wire on Thursday, and hitter matchups on Friday for FanRag. And then I do daily recaps for FantasyAssembly.com and some DFS stuff for the StraightShootersDFS.com, which is me and my buddy who used to work at FanRag run together. So, again, Justin, thanks for having me on. It was great to meet you down at Tout Wars. To the other two gentlemen here, it was great to get to speak to you and hear some different insights. I enjoyed it. So best of luck to the rest of the season to you guys.
Thank you, Greg. Chuck, why don't you tell people what you're working on and where you can be reached?
Well, I think I'm probably more so than anything, I'm working on giving Justin Mason a coronary because somehow or another, I've struggled to work with the technology. I am the stereotypical old guy struggling with technology here. But I'm doing the Of Note column every single week, which Justin seems to appreciate, even though he has to change it around and get it in the right format, etc. for me every week, which is out this week. And do me a favor, since I posted it at the wrong time, if there was ever a time you went and gave it a look, I think it's a good article, and we need to make up for the fact that I posted it in the middle of the night when I wasn't supposed to. I'm Chuck Anderson at Just Chucking It, and I appreciate the forum a great deal, and the listeners out there allow us this forum, which I really appreciate.
Hey, having you on the staff means that people aren't calling me old anymore, so that's okay. Darius, where keep your reach? What are you working on?
You can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. I had a new piece up at BP Wrigleyville yesterday about the Cubs bullpen, which has done some historic BABIP defying, so I kind of dug into that a little bit. I also had an FWFB piece up this week about some pitchers to look at going forward, because I used the new expected WOBA from the StatCast database to see who might have got unlucky in the first half and whether we think that they might be able to turn it around. And I'll just give a little plug to any British fans that might be listening. I will be down in London next week on July the 4th. I believe that's some kind of important day in America. Don't really know. But we're having a baseball event in Hyde Park in London, and me and a guy from the British podcast I do, Batflips and Nerds, will be there. So any British fans, please come along, check out, and yeah, feel free to tweet at me if you're going, and we'll see if we can meet up.
And you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network Thursdays from 8 to 10 p.m. With Laura Michaels for the Tout Wars Hour. You can read all my stuff over at Fangraphs, where I write 4 to 5 times a week, and on Friends of Fantasy Benefits, where I write periodically and do a lot of Chuck's editing. You can also hear me on this podcast 3 times a week, and the football podcast, which I'm about to literally go and record the first episode of the new season. So definitely go on iTunes and check that out. And then give us a rate and review. It really helps us out. If it's of the 5-star variety, we'll make sure you get entered in to win some cool Friends of Fantasy Benefits gear. That is going to wrap us up for this episode. For Chuck, Darius, Greg, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Every night.